Hi, and welcome to the latest episode of the STM Studio Supplies podcast. STM Studio Supplies developed out of solving problems for people, and along the way, collected a huge grab bag of studio solutions. These cover problems associated with dance through acoustic, sound, lighting, and basically we're there to help. For now though, this episode is about Angela Lau. Introducing Angela, the anointed queen of the Australian dance festivals. Now, the term a force of nature is rather overused and consequently devalued. Similarly, the description tiger mum is often seen as derogatory. Angela is in many ways both these things and came from both these things, but in a totally good way. Today, we investigate who she is, why she is, and discover how a broken heart led to the world of dance and ultimately the Australian Dance Festival. Along the way, we discuss why Angela chose not to be an accountant. Hey, that was a hard choice, Ange. What led her to starting the Australian Dance Festival from its small beginnings to now attracting thousands of participants daily. And just to know, the energy there has to be felt to be believed. And if for that alone, Angela, we salute you. We will discuss why sci-fi is part of innovation, people, books and mentors that have been important to Angela, and some of the help, including tech-savvy interns that have made an impact. I'm hoping to revisit this conversation after the 15th of December when ADA 2018 takes place, and that'll be at the Sydney Olympic Park Sports Centre in Homebush. In the meantime, contrary to thoughts you may have later, and actually rather sadly, this episode is not sponsored by Google Docs. Over to Anne.
Oh, wow. Thanks, Mum. You've pretty much summed everything up in a nutshell. I'm originally from Malaysia, and my parents were educated in England, and they never wanted us to be sent overseas to be without our parents, as they were. So they made the decision to move the family to Australia. So I actually went to a school in Manly, went to Stella Maris, and then I went to North Sydney Girls. Then I started a cadetship with an accounting firm called Arthur Anderson, and they helped me get through university and, you know, learn about the importance of being in a great and professional team, and also that I definitely didn't want to be an accountant. So I really actually think that I might be a bit of a socialist at heart. Funny that, but I don't actually like exchanging my time for money. And I decided quite early on, I think in my early 20s, that being an employee was not for me. And I decided that I wanted to go back to uni and do my master's degree. And in that time, I was very lucky. I started doing something called salsa dancing. And as part of a uni project, they actually asked me to look at their instructor training program. And they were so impressed with the work that I did, they actually offered me a contract after uni. So I quit being an accountant and I set up my own company and I became a business coach. And from that, you know, I continued to do the salsa dancing, which really shaped my life. Dance has given me a lot in life. I'd broken up with a boyfriend and that's how I ended up being in dance because somebody suggested that getting into salsa would help me get over the breakup. And there I found my calling, I guess, my job. I made a lot of friends and networks, and they asked me to help them with an event called the Sydney Salsa Congress, which is now called the Sydney Latin Festival. And that was my first foray into events. And the Sydney Salsa Congress was really the preview to the Australian Dance Festival because it was an event that had workshops and parties and shows, and my business partners at the time looked at each other and we said, you know, so you think you can dance us out? It's really popular. Why isn't anybody doing an event like this in the ballet, tap, jazz world? And we decided to do the Australian Dance Festival.
And we're very grateful.
Now, interestingly, and this is something that is close to my heart and I think yours, I noticed in the age group of my kids that the flow of teenagers that come through the house are absolutely trans-ethnicity. They're everyone from Indians to Aboriginals to black people, and there's no sense of any racialism or any discrimination in that generation that I'm seeing, and I hope that's, you know, common. But you had to come here a longer time ago as a Chinese-born person and was Chinese or ethnicity. Did you find that limiting, or did you have issues with that? And how does that sort of become part of who you are and what you do now?
I think that I was very lucky in that my parents brought me up to be a very confident person. I never really had any issues with self-esteem. I think coming into Australia when I was 13, obviously being a teenager, it's a bit of an awkward age. And there were not that many Chinese students in the school that I went to. I never really felt that there was a sense of racism towards me, though. I might have seen it maybe... and I think mainly with racism, people often react, I think, more to the way you talk than perhaps the way that you look. Because I think that I was lucky in that I was brought up speaking English and I had a good grasp of the language. And, you know, I think when people speak to me on the telephone, or, you know, they wouldn't even think of what I look like. They would just assume that I'm a white person, per se. And I know that even when I was working in the accounting firm, often when people did meet me, even though I had the last name Lau, they looked a little bit taken aback because I didn't present as to how I sounded. But having said that, I think I was lucky as well that I've got a lot of strong women in my family, and they always sort of said to me that they used their ethnicity as a strength, but, you know, ways that people remembered them. So I've always remembered that. And even when I got married, I really didn't want to change my name because I really felt as though my maiden name was important in terms of my identity and who I was. And looking at Australia now, you know, I've got kids. I married an Englishman and my kids are of mixed race. And I look around their cohorts and, as you say, Martin, you know, everybody's mixing around and it doesn't seem to be an issue now. And it's absolutely fantastic. I mean, I love the fact that Australia is so multicultural. And, you know, I wouldn't be where I am without having had other people come into this country. My business partners with the Sydney Salsa Congress, one was Brazilian and another one was from Uruguay. So, you know, I think it's an amazing thing that in this country there are people that come from different backgrounds, from a non-English speaking background, and they can come into this country and create successful businesses and experiences for other people.
I so agree. And dance is such a universal language too, and I think that's important and interesting in itself. So you mentioned some fairly powerful women in your background, and I think that's a good positive thing that's made you who you are. What would you say, though, as to what drives you, what motivates you, what your passions are that have helped you become the successful person that we see you as?
I think it's really important to do what you love. You know, coming from an Asian background, it was pretty much drummed into us as young children. You've got to study hard, you've got to work hard, you've got to have a good career, go to university. You know, like the whole, I mean, it's funny because now I joke with my son because, you know, he watches these programs where they make fun of Chinese people, and he says, "Oh, you doctor yet? You doctor yet?" You know, it's kind of like the whole Asian parents' dream of becoming a doctor. And personally, I would actually be really sad if my son decided to become a doctor. I want him to do what he loves. For me, like, I think that's what's created my success, because when I work, it doesn't feel like it's work. I actually love what I'm doing. And I love creating these events, and I love creating a great experience for children at the Australian Dance Festival and for Latin dancers at the Sydney Latin Festival. You know, I often refer to my events as my pseudo children. I call the ADF my 9-year-old.
That's cool.
So it's one of those things where, yeah, it's, you know, you have to nurture these events. And I love working independently. It's something that I've actually grown into. I started off with business partners, and that was great. I felt like I needed their strengths and things that I didn't have at the beginning. And, you know, I think in my late 30s, I had a business coach who basically told me, you know, you've got to stop leaning and start living. And I was a bit confused by what he meant, but I think I realized that, you know, I was a bit fearful of going out and totally being on my own in terms of being totally responsible for a business. And when he said that, it actually gave me the strength at the time to continue running ADF, because my business partner, Marcia, who was Brazilian, she'd been, a little bit traumatized by the second year of the ADF when we got sued by Town Hall for ruining their floors and, you know, like insurance issues had to come into it. You know, it was a pretty frightening time.
Yeah, you mentioned that. Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt, but that's something I was actually going to kind of lead up to. That Town Hall thing was almost enough to stop you doing it. I would have thought it was a massive low point, but I guess that's balanced by high points. So maybe a little bit more about that and perhaps moving on from there to some of your high points, and then coming back to something that I think is important, which was your mention of a mentor. But for the moment, those high points and low points, Ange, obviously that was one of the low points.
Well, the Town Hall experience was definitely a low point, but it was a funny year that year. That was the year that I did meet my business mentor. His name's Garrett Norris, and at the time he was basically just volunteering his services to help out. We'd basically met him because he was working for a company that we had approached to help us with sponsorship. Because being at Town Hall, it was obviously a very expensive venue, and we really were not, you know, the first year of any business, you'd really be very lucky to make money. And I don't expect as a business owner now, and with the experience behind me, that a business would, if I can make it break even for the first 3 years, and then after that third year it starts to become profitable, then, you know, that's kind of my tolerance level for it.
Good advice to studio owners.
Oh, absolutely. I think, you know, because also of my accounting background, I've always got that thought of my opportunity costs, you know, like the amount of hours and time I spend working on my business. If I was to actually charge out that time as an accountant, you know, like that's the money that I would be losing. I could have afforded to do that when I was in my late 20s when I started this business, because I didn't have kids and a mortgage. But, you know, I feel very lucky that things happened in the times that they did, because, you know, now I'm sitting at a point where I have a mortgage and I do have children, and yet I've got the ability to run businesses that give me both enough money and enough spare time that I can do what I love.
We love the spare time part. So obviously you've taken some time and thought about achieving a life balance. I'm not quite sure how you do it. I certainly not very good at it myself. How do you do that?
I think it's looking at how I grew up, like, and basically, as I said, I've had a lot of strong women in my life, but my parents weren't around a lot. They were busy working. You know, one was an accountant, another one was a lawyer, and we were pretty much what you would say latchkey kids. You know, you'd come home from school, open the door yourself, and there'd be nobody home basically until about 6 or 7 o'clock. I didn't want that for my children, and I certainly didn't want that for myself. And I married a school counsellor, so he's got a beautiful work-life balance, you know, working school hours and not having to do much when he comes home in relation to work and the school holidays. And I guess I've wanted to match that. You know, I want my kids to see me around. I want to be a mother. You know, like, I've got two young children and they seem to have grown up way too fast. I'm really actually mourning the fact that the little one's going to be at school next year. And I'm glad to say that I actually got to be a part of their lives when they were young. You know, like, my businesses have allowed me to work part-time, essentially. And as I said, I'm really grateful for that. I don't want to be that person who, you know, looks back on their life when they can't, they're too old to do anything about it and have regrets. You know, like, I think most important of my role is being a mother to these children.
Ah, that's perfect. It's something you really don't get to have a take two on, that's for sure. And I actually really like that idea, though, that you've got these other kids, which are these projects, and I found that a really nice thought. I guess you get a whole bunch of other kids too with your use of volunteers and interns. This is something I think that's been substantial to your, well, for want of a technical sort of a word, business model with the ADF and the like. How does that work for them? Obviously, it's good for you, and I'd like to get a bit more on that. But how does this volunteer and intern thing work out?
Okay, so we haven't had interns for a while, and that's basically because of the location of where I moved my house to. I work out of home. When I lived in Stanmore, I was very close to Sydney University, obviously, and it was easy to get to because there was a train station. And we also had quite a good relationship with, at the time, UTS were running an events degree.
Oh, okay.
And we could actually, they actually needed to do something like, I think, 120 hours in as part of that degree in terms of an internship. So we were very lucky in that we got some really good interns out of that. And I was also lucky in the sense that I managed to also, even outside of that, we would get people who were happy to have that work experience because the event's exciting. Because I had my early years in the workforce at Arthur Andersen and I was trained really well, I really feel a sense of responsibility to the young ones. Like, if they're going to give up their time, that we really need to actually impart some knowledge and experience to them. So in terms of the internships, yes, they had to do a certain number of hours. But I think I really wanted to impart to them that systems, you know, reasons why we do things, you know, like not just sort of set them about a task, you know, that was mindless, but that they really understood the reasons why they were doing things and the impact of what they were doing on the entire event. So I see the role of being a mentor as very important because I've had great mentors in my life and I really like the idea of paying it forward.
No, that's excellent. I think one of the great things about getting young people involved in what you're doing is, apart from the fact that they keep it relevant, and a lot of your sort of clients are definitely quite young, is that they bring a lot of tech savvy with them and social media savvy and all the best.
They absolutely do. I remember once upon a time, like, we were trying to find a way where we could find the emails of every Facebook friend that we had. And at one point, Australian Dance Festival was a person, like, on Facebook, and we had to try and find a way of getting all their email addresses. And it was taking hours and hours and hours. And basically, one of my interns came in and said, "You can just do this." And he'd found a way to basically export all of these emails across in basically 5 minutes.
I know, it's scary,
whereas
isn't it?
Yeah, it is. they're definitely great.
I think in a previous conversation you mentioned that your main tools for putting this together, which I thought was awesome, was Google Docs and Campaign Monitor and, of course, as mentioned, social media. Any other tips or tricks that you picked up that you can share, particularly that might, say, help a studio owner or someone similar?
I love Google Docs. I don't have... This year, I've actually started doing some breakdancing classes, like organising them, not actually teaching them, in St Ives, because my son wants to learn how to breakdance. And I use Google Docs as a studio manager to survey my students and their parents, to organise excursions, to find out whether or not they're going to come back next year, all that sort of stuff. So Google Docs, because I love spreadsheets, it's basically an online form that you can set up, and people fill in that form and automatically it transports everything into a spreadsheet for you. I use that. Yep.
I was going to say, there's that Arthur Andersen coming out again. Love an Excel sheet myself.
Absolutely. As an accountant, loving spreadsheets. But, I mean, I use this to organise bus transfers at ADF. I use it to get instructors to sign their contracts. I use it to help, you know, like with booth holders so that I know whether they require parking and, you know, like who's going to be on the door list. I mean, the uses for Google Docs are literally It's just amazing. Another big tip I would say is somebody told me about an app called If This Then That, IFTTT. And I don't know about you, Martin, but I'm finding that, you know, you sort of get on top of one form of social media, which is Facebook, and then Instagram comes along, and then Snapchat. And, you know, I find it more and more difficult to sort of figure out exactly what each of these different apps are. But with If This Then That, you can actually coordinate your social media so that, for example, if I decided to post something on Instagram, it then automatically will post it onto my Facebook page. Or if I upload YouTube, if I upload a new video onto YouTube, it automatically posts into my Facebook page as well. So instead of doing the same thing across three different platforms, I can just do it on one, and then it automatically translates into the other social media platforms as well.
I think we might check that out as well. We tried Hootsuite, which does sort of similar things, but it wasn't that friendly in terms of us. But then we didn't get the tech savvy people on it, so we'll see where that takes us. Hey, Ange, back to being a bit more personal, I mean, I'm a serious reader. Not everyone has time to be that. But is there any favourite books, documentaries, films, stuff that you might have been impactive to who you think you are? And they don't have to, they can just be fun. It doesn't have to be anything serious. Is there anything you like to do there?
Yeah. Well, my favourite movie as, I guess, an early teenager, as a tween, was Dirty Dancing, believe it or not. Love that movie. Absolutely love that movie. And it's funny because, you know, given that I had no idea what salsa dancing was when I was 12 or 13, and that, you know, falling into that dance actually ended up being me being events, you know, in retrospect, looking back at us, at me being that tween watching that movie, it's actually really defined my life.
Look, we just watched it again the other day. My wife, Helen loves it. And it's a lot of fun. It really is cool.
Oh, nobody puts baby in a corner. I love that line. but, yeah, no, it's a great movie. In terms of books, I'm a great fan of sci-fi. I actually love science fiction. And it's funny because I was actually reading an article the other day about China and how they started to recently run these science fiction fairs, whereas before it used to be frowned upon, you know, like why would anybody waste their time reading about fantasy? And what they did was they did some studies and they realized that why the West is so good at being innovative and thinking outside of the square is because they have science fiction.
Imagination.
Yes, that's right.
There's a theory that if you can think it can happen. And I think there's an extraordinary degree of quite recent science fiction that's now part of our lives. It's kind of back to that. If you can think it, you can do it.
Yeah, and, you know, it's funny because you've just articulated one of the things that I try to live by. You know, I often look at what other people are doing, and, you know, as I said, I'm lucky that I was brought up to not really have any feelings of fear around things, but I often think to myself, if somebody else has done it, it's possible, and therefore I can do it too.
Yeah, there's a great book written, I think it's called The Rise of Superman, and it's about getting in flow and just getting to that point of achievement that hasn't been achieved by others. And that's a really significant thing. If someone else has done it, the ability for you to do it yourself, and the 4-minute mile was a classic. I mean, they cracked the 4-minute mile and the next minute everyone was doing it. It goes on and on and on. So our standards are being pushed by, I guess, comparison, which is really a good thing. Yeah.
Yes.
So good on you, because we're on the same page in lots of things, and I think that ability to be fearless, and that's not being silly, it's not being aware of dangers and pitfalls, it's just not necessarily thinking that they are an unjumpable hurdle, I guess, and that's obviously been a massive part about how you've been able to do a lot of the things that you do. Now, tell me, just back to your team for a second and back to sort of some of these influences. If there were some people, and they could be living or they can be dead, that you'd think, well, A, I'd really like to meet them, and again, having articulated it might happen, But people living or dead that you would like to have on your team?
Oh, it's really funny. I feel really lucky because I've got an amazing team. And there's a part of me that wouldn't ever want to change things. I'm just going to mention some of them. Marco Panzik, who is on my team, I've been privileged to have him as the artistic director for the ADF now for I think it's been 5 years. And I find that he is just one of these people who he's got your back. And, you know, he's so wise and so compassionate and, you know, he's got his heart in the right place. And I just feel extremely lucky that he's on my team. Yeah, I think it's funny because I'm as much as we talked about sci-fi and imagining things, I with the whole team thing, I feel very grounded in reality. I feel like I'm so lucky because there are some amazing people in the dance industry. And I feel like, especially within Sydney, you know, I've got people that I can call on for advice. You know, there's Marco, there's like Glenda Yee, Gabby Robinson from Buddy Online. You know, all people that I whose advice that I would seek out and listen to. You know, so yeah, I can't think of people like, you know, the Gandhis or the Anthony Robbins or anything like that. They're a little bit too far removed for me.
I hear you. Okay, so, look, I think that's wise in a sense. I mean, if you play with the cards you're dealt and maximise those, then you know your chances are higher. So, Angela, I'd like to
I am extremely grateful. Yeah,
and people have got so little time these days, and hopefully they're listening to this in the car or somewhere where they're doing something that's multitasking to a degree. But if people want to get in touch with you, if they want to get in touch with the ADF, what are the best means? Obviously, Google, which has become the universal name now for a search. What would you suggest?
I don't tweet, but basically sending me an email works. So angela@australiandancefestival.com.au. I'm not very good at answering phones, but, you know, the Australian Dance Festival website is obviously another place where if you contact us through that, you also get through to me.
Fantastic. And if you had one short message or even one single word that you wanted to share with the world, what would that be?
Do what you love. You know, make that your work. I feel extremely grateful that that's what I've been allowed to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you really hate what you're doing as work, you've got to really stop and think about it because that's where you're going to be spending most of your living hours.
Yeah, well, it's that wonderful expression, isn't it? If you're doing what you love, you never work another day in your life. So well done, Angela, for never working another day in your life.
Thanks, Martin. Thank you.
Well, thank you for listening, everybody, and I hope you enjoyed it. Angela, thank you once again. Hopefully we'll see you out there at Olympic Park for this year's Australian Dance Festival. It really is a great event. I'll be there. I'll be in the teacher's booth or the teacher's room and open to any questions you might want to ask about the things that we're expert at. You'll be able to find out more about this particular podcast and see others that we've done previously on our website, stmstudiosupplies.com. And you'll see a banner there and Third from the Writers podcast. And there you'll see previous podcasts and also show notes for this one. So there's, you know, anything we referred to from people through books, we've tried to give a link to it so you can follow up in your own time. Also, beside that in podcasts, we've got a thing called Toolbox, which is again an attempt by us to start sharing the knowledge that we've accumulated over time in a way that will be useful to you. But the things that we know will be useful to you is stuff you've asked for. This is the way we've developed the company. The catalogue of stuff we've got comes from solving problems, answering questions, and we'd like to continue to do that. We'd like to continue to innovate for you in an endless search for excellence. Along the way, find the quality that commitment gives. In the meantime, happy dancing, everybody, or those of you that are dancers. And to all of you, God bless and lots of love from us at STM Studio Supply.